I'll move to agenda item two, which is open public input. All of you, most of you at least, have been here before. We have a three-minute rule. We have a little bit of flexibility today because we only have seven, and we've allocated an hour. So we'll try and be as understanding of that as we can. I'm going to call you up. I'm going to call you up three at a time, and Tammy will run the clock, and we'll be reasonable in that approach. So Ron Hayes, Steve Shane Weiss, and Greg Jones, please. Ron, take it away.
My name's Ron Hayes, and I'm with Puget Sound Anglers.
Open. Pull the mic up, please.
Oh, thank you.
Ron Hayes with Puget Sound Anglers. I live in Port Townsend. I appreciate the opportunity to attend this public meeting. This is only the second one that I've attended over the years. I want to thank you for having one of the regular meetings in Port Angeles this year. We appreciate the time and dedication you provide to hunting and fishing community. We don't always agree with your actions, and you will probably hear other concerns over the next 2 days. But we do feel that a commission process is the best way to allow the public to have input into the management of our state wildlife resources. It has come to our attention from friends who fish the valuable Baker Lake sockeye fishery each summer that the Sauk Seattle tribe has indicated an interest in taking up to one-third of the overall harvestable treaty share of sockeye salmon at the Baker River fish trap. We understand that the Sauk Seattle UNA doesn't include Skagit River or Baker River, so their demand for fish is currently an intertribal issue based on their treaty rights. We're hopeful that these three tribes, the Swinomish, the Upper Skagit, and the Sauk Seattle, can reach an agreeable conclusion, but we're not aware of any resolution at this time. That said, our immediate concern is how the department is monitoring this issue as co-manager on behalf of the sports fishery. Our concern is that where, when, and what numbers are sockeye are going to be taken to meet the tribal shares. The information we have is there will be a usual gill netting in the Skagit mainstream as has been done in previous years. If the Sauk Seattle take their sockeye from the Baker River fish trap, this has the potential to negatively impact the viable sport fishery that has been developed for the Baker Lake complex. There are ramifications on the needed escapement for natural spawning and egg take to maintain the Baker River sockeye run at the hatchery. We're requesting that the department have appropriate legal paperwork for a temporary restraining order pursuant to U.S. versus Washington, ready and available to take to federal court should sport harvest be threatened by the potential tribal overharvest. Please keep us advised as to your tracking of the progress of the tribal negotiations. We don't want to see the sport fishery and the sockeye runs impacted. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Shane Weiss.
Mr. Chair, Director, Commissioners, my name is Steve Shane Weiss and I reside in Olympia, Washington. My comments today regard a recent waterfowl advisory group meeting I attended where the subject of corn pond hunting was discussed. As expected, this issue was not well received by the WAG. Many of whom hunt corn ponds. Indeed, their vote for a motion to reject stopping corn pond hunting should closely represent the number of members who hunt them. However, while this outcome was expected, what bothered me most was being denied to speak in support of my side. No public comment was allowed, and while discussing the agenda item in open meeting, no one called on me. I had to sit there and listen to this group eviscerate my corn pond document with falsehoods and lies that I could easily have rebuffed in open debate if only allowed the chance to speak. And the WAG worked themselves into such a frenzy over the issue, they almost made a motion to send a letter of reprimand to the commission for, quote, sending such crap for them to review, end quote. I think instead this commission should consider totally remaking the WAG so it represents only free public hunting, which means no one from commercial outfits or private hunt clubs, and includes all age groups with at least some women members. Basically, the WAG should represent the waterfowling demographic that currently exists in Washington State, who primarily hunt public lands. I also emphatically ask that public comment opportunities be added to WAG meetings, including both open comment and agenda topics. As to the issue of corn pond hunting, the commission should consider the math. Very few people who buy a hunting license patronize expensive commercial or private operations with corn ponds. Most people still hunt free public lands. But if the outfits with corn ponds keep capturing more and more of the wintering waterfowl population, why should people who hunt public lands keep buying a license if there's almost nothing left for them to shoot? Indeed, increasing the opportunity for harvesting waterfowl from free public lands would induce the most people to buy a license. In closing, I fight against corn ponds because I fear a future where some 17-year-old friends can no longer go out to public lands in fall at dawn and experience the wonder of harvesting some ducks for dinner through their own skill and effort, as I once did. Thank you.
Mr. Smith.
Yeah, I find that a bit upsetting, actually. On the membership of the WAG, is it, and I don't know who to address this to, Greco's looking, is it structured such that commercial outfits have it, or is this just have more representation, or is this just the way this particular one has happened now?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, so we always do public requests for participation on a regular basis as we re-up our committees, and then when we get applicants, we try to have a diverse representation based on who's applied from their interests.
Should have done that right away, Mr. Chair, Commissioner. So as we have any committee that we pull together, we continually look for new representation on a semi-regular basis. It's usually on a three-year basis, and announcements go out seeking applicants who are interested, be it for the Game Management Advisory Committee or the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Committee or the Waterfowl Group. And then when we have that, we try our very best to distribute that across representation across all aspects of the state as well as interest groups. I know that Kyle Spragans, who's in charge of the Waterfowl Advisory Group right now, is actively pursuing to increase representation from members from all of the different groups and across the state. I don't have enough information to speak to the current dynamic. I don't have those numbers in front of me. But it does result from that process of seeking applicants, reviewing those applicants, and then making recommendations to the director on that representation to try to make it diverse, and so we do attempt to have it be diverse.
Kelly, did you want to comment?
No, I don't have the roster in front of me, but I'll take a look at it. I'll commit to take a look at it and see what level of diversity we have and see if we can improve that or not based on what that looks like and what applicants we might have.
Okay. Just one second. I want to ask a question to Mr. Shainwise. You made a comment that this group that you engaged with had a number of corn pond hunters on board, but you didn't say they were part of a commercial organization, a commercial hunting group, did you?
I don't know the makeup of the WAG, which each member is, but just in a casual conversation with some people, some of the people that we're speaking represent commercial outfits, and I believe there's one that's a private member on there.
Okay. Commissioner McIsaac.
Chairman, a question for Dr. Gardner on the process here. I thought I heard that the WAG had made a recommendation or something like that. I wonder if you could refresh our memory on the process of whether or not they've made a recommendation, and was that a recommendation that the commission has seen, or where this is in a process for a commission consideration?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner McIsaac, I believe where we are at with that is that we have a commission agenda item scheduled, and I think it's at the September meeting to come back and revisit this. And in the meantime, Kyle was asked to speak to the Waterfowl Advisory Group about this topic. So as far as the committees or the advisory committees go, that's what they are, is they are a body where the department staff can hear from constituents with an interest in the topic, and then we take that into consideration and elevate that either to the director or the commission at the appropriate time. I have not been made aware of a specific recommendation from that meeting that came forward to me that would then be delivered to the director or to the commission, but I believe that that would be the process. They've vetted that, and then Kyle will have that experience and the information from that advisory group as he comes forward with his work around waterfowl management.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else? Okay. Greg Jones?
Good morning, Chairman, Director, everybody. So my name is Greg Jones. I'm president of the Working Dogs for Wildlife Conflict Resolution. The subject that I'm bringing up is House Bill 1516, which was signed by the governor recently. And basically, over the last couple of years, we have collaboratively been working with WDF, WHS, US, Conservation Northwest, and others on a program that would allow qualified dog owners to train dogs to be available when called upon by WDFW to conflict sites. Currently, we cannot do so in the state. One of our members responded to a human mortality last year. We hope this never happens again, but we as dog owners want to have well-trained dogs when we do respond. House Bill 1516 was a product of that collaboration. The governor has signed, so the next phase will be to implement this law change into a viable working program. I wanted to address to the commission some of our goals and concerns going into the next phase. We need the opportunity to train our dogs in all types of weather conditions. Cats do their thing year-round, so we need to be prepared. We always want to be successful whenever we are called out. We want to continue to build trust and a good working relationship with WDFW and our group. One of our goals is to improve the culture or image of hounds and working dogs for both WDFW and the public. That particular one's kind of taken a hit the last couple of years. We have and continue to emphasize the difference between reactive responses and proactive cougar management. This program deals with reactive response needed for wildlife conflict issues. We urge the commission to keep this program separate from the politics of cougar management. We would like this program to stand alone within WDFW enforcement for the purpose of reactive wildlife conflict issues and not bound to cougar management policies, as there are a lot of politics and differences of opinion regarding most aspects of cougar management. Please note, we are happy to help navigate these politics and policies for proactive cougar management. We just ask that our program be treated separately. We want to keep our program successful to our narrow goals and objectives. We also want to express that we have been very happy with the progress and members of the working group. It's been a very collaborative and positive experience. Hopefully this will continue into the next phase with new members that may have differing views. And basically that's it. I did want to thank the director. He kind of helped out a little bit keeping the staff in a straight and narrow line at the beginning. Becky from enforcement was really good. Raquel, she's super. And then we had, of course, Representative Blake was our sponsor. So, and that's it.
Well, I just want to express my gratitude. Thank you for being here and bringing this up, and also to say to the commission that I, as a commissioner, am very supportive of having this be a program working with enforcement. I am from Region 1. This is a topic on the tip of their tongues in the enforcement program there, and hear all the time the value that they feel this brings as a tool. And so I just want to be very clear that I'm supportive of this being in the realm of enforcement, and thanks for bringing that forward.
Thank you. Commissioner Thornburg was very supportive. I'm going to take this to a new level. Because after the flogging that we took in Spokane over a lot of the issues with mountain lions and stuff, I consider this bill and these guys that are doing it and been backing it and working it damn near a gift from heaven. I've had the opportunity to talk to three or four of the houndsmen that have been involved in this from day one. All of them seem to be very good, straight-up guys with nothing but the best hoping for. And like you said, we want to keep this completely separate, away from Wolf or from mountain lion management. And there again, like he says, running lions with dogs when you need it done, you need it done. And running them... And the 1st of December with 6 inches of fresh snow is altogether a different world than running them in August when it's 90 degrees and 10% humidity. You've got to have good dogs. And that's the only way you're going to do it is to be able to train them, keep them exercised up so they're in good shape. And there again, it's a process. They're animals. You've got to train them. There's no matter how well they're bred, there's some of them that work and some of them that don't. So this gives the guys an opportunity to weed through that so that when they are called to and we really need them and we need them, that they have dogs that are trained up, ready to go, and we can call upon them. To a person, they're all realize what's at stake in this, and they're all volunteering to self-police, to do everything that they possibly can, to where if there are problems, they will be dealt with and dealt with swiftly from inside. We're not going to have a bunch somebody riding herd on these guys. So no, like I said, this is a gift that has been given us. We need to avail ourselves to it. Working through enforcement, I think we're headed in the right direction, and supposedly, see Becky here, but I talked to her yesterday, day before, and I think she's going to talk about this a little later, to form a group, to set down the criteria, get everybody on board, what we need to do, what the goals, objectives are, and see what we can do with this so it can be a very, very positive for this department. So thank you.
Commissioner Baker. Thank you, and thank you for coming.
Yep.
I also support using citizens with well-trained dogs when we need to go find a cougar, but I have a question. Yep. In terms of the training that you're talking about, my understanding is that your dogs will track a cat and then usually tree it. Are animals hurt during the training process or killed?
Okay, this bill strictly, and that's one reason that it went through the House and the Senate and the governor signed it, was that it's a non-lethal bill. So in training, I mean, I guess you can't guarantee that something might happen, but the intent is no, there will not be any lethal activity. When when we, you know, if we get called by the state, by you guys to respond to an incident, then there's usually lethal. But that's a separate program than what we're doing here. We're just training our dogs. We go out, train. We may not even see a cougar, and that's not the intent every time to go out, you know, give them exercise, get the young dogs used to, you know, tracking a cat. So the actual, you know, putting a cat in a tree is not going to happen every time out. So.
Okay, Larry. And there again, just to clarify a little more for Barbara, there are a certain percent of hounds that want to chase deer. So this gives them an opportunity to break them of those bad habits. Keep them trained up, keep them focused, be around the older dogs so they know where to go and what to do and that kind of thing. So, no, just to, and just like you said, to go out and until they get a lion up a tree, that's not success. Being out there, get their dogs, keep them in shape, and break them up some bad habits if they have them. And no, it just makes for a lot better process in the end.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'd also like to thank you for traveling all the way here to testify in front of the commission. My question is more of a process for our director here as to how this program gets finalized. And whether or not this gentleman's group would be involved in how. So I wonder if you could speak a little bit about to when a regulation might come before the commission or not, if that's been delegated, and whether or not there's any kind of formal advisory group that would involve these folks and other interested folks in getting to a couple of alternatives or a draft final recommendation on how to finalize this program.
Sure, Commissioner McIsaac, I'll give you my best shot on it. So we'll hear a little bit more this afternoon when Raquel reports about our legislative bills as a whole. You've already mentioned Becky Bennett. Becky will be our lead on this. She led the bill through the legislative process. She's pulling together a group of advisors that will include working dogs, certainly. It will also probably include, well, it will include others, including conservation groups, HSUS probably, so that we can make sure that we're addressing all aspects. We expect that group to be pulled together in July, start working together, probably be back in front of this commission with a recommendation targeting December. If might roll over into January, depending how quickly we can get everything pulled together. But it will be a broad-based, diverse, transparent public process to develop a rule that will come back to you all, hopefully, at the end of this year.
Talking with Becky, she, and throw it out for the fellow commissioners, she was hoping to get, there's one commissioner jumping up and down volunteering, and she was hoping to get another one or two. So something to be thinking about, because you may be hit with this. So yes, she's wanting a very broad base group to form the regulations and then follow it along as it goes along to see if we need to make some tweaks and quirks and things in it down the road.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. The next three, Lorna Smith, Randy Johnson, and Ed Bowen. Take us away, Laura.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. I live on the Olympic Peninsula in Port Townsend. My name is Lorna Smith. And it's good to have the commission come visit us here locally. I want to talk about my views on where the Department of Fish and Wildlife should be heading. And I want to say right up front, in my view, it's not heading where we need to go. Back in the mid-80s, I co-chaired an initiative effort with John McGlynn, who went on later to be a commissioner for many years. And that initiative, Initiative 90, had the intent of broadening the base of the department and broadening the funding for the department. We went after 0.1% of the state sales tax back then. We worked hand in hand with department folks after hours. They weren't involved in, you know, as part of their official job, but it was a very collaborative effort, sportsmen's groups, conservation groups. We didn't succeed at the polls. There was kind of a last minute out of the blue campaign run against us by the Property Rights Alliance, who were very active at that time. But the point is, you know, there's been recognition for a long time in Washington that this department has to change. And you know, look around, look at this audience. Where's the diversity? We're all getting older. The hunting population in Washington State, the hunting participation is falling off. And what I see the department doing in trying to, you know, stay up and meet the budget shortfall is just plugging the hole by more hunting opportunity. Case in point, expanding the black bear hunting season without any science basis that I can see. When I read the justification why this is being done, it looks like it's just based on the need to offer more hunting opportunity. This is just going down in a spiral that is not going to end well for the department. You know, I see the zoos and aquariums and places like that getting huge visitations, people interested in wildlife, but they're not going out in droves and visiting state wildlife areas. They don't know where they are. They don't know they're welcome. They don't know they can go out there and birdwatch. I think most people would support wildlife financially, even if they were given one, a reason to do so and a means to do so. So I'm just really here making the case for, please, let's start working towards that change. Otherwise, this department is just, these budget shortfalls are going to continue and they're going to get worse. So I guess I will wrap up right there.
Thank you for your comments. We appreciate it. Randy Johnson.
Good morning. My name is Randy Johnson, and I serve the Jamestown Tsklallam Tribe as their habitat program manager. Honorable Fish and Wildlife Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to provide the following testimony on behalf of the Jamestown Tsklallam Tribe. Later today, you will consider a funding request to the state legislature through the supplemental budget process to fund the relocation of the Herd Creek Hatchery outside of the Dungeness River floodplain. The Herd Creek Hatchery is a very important salmon conservation hatchery and has been critical in the incubation and rearing of Chinook salmon from the Elwha River and especially from the Dungeness River. And these are both subpopulations of the ESA-listed Puget Sound Chinook. Dungeness Chinook are so imperiled that in recent years they have often been one of the stocks limiting the ocean salmon fisheries. So restoring this population to a healthy condition is absolutely essential. Additionally, the Elwha and Dungeness stocks originate right in the middle of the hunting homeland of the southern resident killer whales. So restoring these populations to a healthy condition will provide benefits for these endangered orcas. The Herd Creek Hatchery will also be crucial in supporting the upcoming Dungeness River Summer Chum Restoration Program. Dungeness Summer Chum are one of the subpopulations of the Hood Canal Eastern Strait Juan de Fuca Summer Chum, which is also an ESA-listed species. And the tribe views restoration of the Dungeness River subpopulation, which is currently flirting with extirpation, as being essential to the delisting of the entire ESU. The Heard Creek Hatchery is particularly important because it utilizes groundwater, which is a pathogen-free water source, which is like the holy grail for fish culturists. Yet, that facility is in grave peril. It is located not only in the floodplain of the Dungeness River, but also within the channel migration zone. And Heard Creek itself is actually a former main channel of the Dungeness River, and the river appears to be in the process of trying to reoccupy that channel. And in beginning in 2015, the river has been migrating quite quickly towards the hatchery, and it has substantially damaged the hatchery in the past. Your agency has attempted to halt the migration of the river with several different projects that have both been ineffective, and they have wisely concluded that the best means of saving this important facility is to relocate it elsewhere on the hatchery grounds, but outside of the channel migration zone in the floodplain. The tribe feels like that is exactly the right thing to do with this important facility. We need to have the continued existence of this facility to support the restoration of these crucial endangered salmon stocks. It's in harm's way. Moving it is the way to go, and the tribe strongly supports this measure. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah, Mr. McIsaac.
Just want to thank Mr. Johnson for coming forward and offering a perspective of the tribe on this important matter. So thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
The question I would have is that the tribe's engaged with the department staff on this, and is there concurrence on the process going forward, or is that still in limbo depending on something new?
No, we have been highly collaborative.
Okay, good. Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Bowen.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ed Bowen, citizen and landowner at Lake Ozette, third largest natural body of water in the state. And I recognize some of the commissioners. There might be some new ones. I know the director's new since I was last before you, I believe, a couple years ago. So I want to re-entertain one topic I brought to you then, and then I have two new ones for you. Previously, I brought before you the last time was regarding the LWAP project lands, the former Lake Allwell and its uplands. That, in my box, has gone nowhere since that commission meeting. It's an issue still, and it's a growing issue. And my request of you is to express and look into what is the interest of the state as those lands are disposed of by the federal government. You have an interest for several reasons. One is you have approximately three acres that you own embedded in those project lands. And the state WASDOT in the rebuilding of the LWA Highway 101 bridge has actually run into a problem with this delay in interest in the project that they're pursuing right now with that bridge project, and particularly in public access issues. And so I leave for you for the record again that particular. My two new ones, one is fish escapement data on listed species. Lake Ozette sockeye is the only salmon on the entire Washington coast, outer coast, that is listed at ESA. And the escapement data continues to be a problem. And what the department has is escapement data posted that was actually flawed at the time it was posted, but it's so out of date, it just throws a nix in it. So there is current data that NOAA Fisheries has actually put together, but I'm having a hard time getting this updated. So I could use your assistance in getting the escapement data for that listed species. And then last but not least, but I do have a fourth one I want to address to you, is this public road culvert topic that's getting bigger and bigger, especially for our counties. And we have several culvert assessments going on up here. RIRA 20, those are all the streams in Clallam and Jefferson County that flow into the Pacific Ocean, is currently doing a culvert assessment. Unfortunately, I don't see Fish and Wildlife a part of what I call the Level B assessment phase. That has been done. That's being done by an NGO. Not finding fault with them particularly, but they don't have a lot of skills in public engagement on these culvert assessments. And Level B assessments are really important to me to know out of the gate. And then fourth, but not last, speaking to your director's report on the fish, I'd like to report to you. We don't have your problem, but we have a problem at the lake with northern pike minnow. On average, anecdotally, a 4-pounder. will pull in about 3/4 of a pound of juvenile fry in the belly of that fish. It is the number one fish predator on the Lake Ozette Sockeye. Thank you.
Thank you all. Appreciate all your. Excuse me. Go ahead, Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. I recall your testimony on the forest lands around the Elwha. And we did, I think there's been sort of turnover in the region, but we were very interested, the commission, in what he brought to us, and that is there are currently federal lands that are being disposed of, and we wanted to take a look at state involvement. I don't know, would that be the Lands 2020 process, perhaps? But anyway, it was... 2 years ago, we heard about it. We thought this was valuable information that he brought to us in terms of some real potential in a recovering landscape that's very important to us. So I would just mention that and put it back on the table and look at what our process would be, maybe.
I'll do that. I honestly cannot speak to it. I've not.
Yeah.
This is my first exposure to that.
But there's been turnover in this region, so yeah.
I'll work with Larry Phillips, regional director, and Julie's here about land acquisition, and we'll follow up.
Thank you.
Yeah, I do remember that testimony, and I do remember, you know, perhaps Joe can go back at some of these notes. But it's not like we completely ignored it. We definitely did follow up, and. As is sometimes the case, you know, we don't get a kind of an end report, and so. But thanks for coming. And
if I could add 2 seconds. Again, my interest. I know the process is going to be difficult, but my interest is I want to make sure the state expresses an interest in this. That's the critical point right now. And secondly, you do have lands there, and what do you plan on doing with those? Those are my 2 points. I want to make sure you're aware of. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to call it the two last people on their open public comment, and to let the commission know, at the end of these presentation by these two people, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Changing the agenda slightly. Rob McCoy and Jamie Michelle, I think. I hope I got that right. Rob, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I provided this as written to you as well because I'm going to list off a slew of statistics and you won't remember everything that I have. There exists a serious lack of comprehensive management for both predators and prey in conjunction in Washington. I've worked for the Macaw Tribe since 1998 and been involved in wildlife management and specific research projects, including deer, elk, and cougars that I'd like to briefly highlight today. First, I'd like to state that ungulate research has shown that adult survival has been found to be stable over broad geographic scales and provides a much smaller role in population dynamics than juvenile survival, which is highly variable and can account for 75% of annual variation in population rates of increase. In my research, I found that indeed adult deer and elk survival rates are stable and within the normal range of variability on the northern Olympic Peninsula. From 2006 to 2009, we radio-collared 218 black-tailed deer fawns. Predation accounted for 75% of deaths. Cougars were confirmed to kill at 49% of all known predation events. The first 9 weeks of life had the highest predation rate, as multiple species of predator were focusing on young and vulnerable deer, typical of most ungulate studies. However, cougars continued to focus on fawns throughout the entire first year of life and were the most significant predator. The average annual survival over the study was 33%, which equates to no population growth when accounting for average adult survival. Hair loss in deer played a role as well, as fawns that were afflicted suffered higher mortality rates during the winter time frame, primarily from cougar predation. From 2010 to 11, we radio-collared 71 Roosevelt elk calves. Over the 2 years, 43 calves died, and predation accounted for 82% of the confirmed deaths, with cougar predation accounting for 77% alone. The estimated average annual survival rate for calves was 36%, which equated to a 2.8% annual population growth rate, which is low. From 2010 to 14, we implemented a cougar research study with GPS collars attached to 5 adult females and 3 adult males. We also captured an additional 5 subadult males, which were not collared. We investigated 994 potential kill sites from the data and recovered prey at 812 sites. The data indicated that 66% of their diet was deer and 17% was elk. The adult female diet was 72% deer and 8% elk, and the adult male diet was 62% elk and 26% deer. We documented 530 deer kills, of which 55% were fawns and 10% were juveniles. We documented 136 elk kills, of which 82% were calves and 13% were juveniles. For the macaw tribes, subsistence hunters have increased dramatically over the past 20 years. The existing subsistence resource can't keep pace with tribal needs. Mountain lions at this point are contributing significantly to limiting the population growth rate of elk, and coupled with hair loss, restricting deer population growth. The tribe believes that they are an important part of the ecosystem and their needs should be balanced with other predators. The tribe believes that single species management approaches don't work. A balance between predator, prey, and human needs are important. WFW, in my opinion, doesn't monitor the correct population parameter when managing ungulate populations. The young born every year tell the tale for the future. Many of our populations of ungulates are struggling to maintain, let alone expand. When random stochastic events such as harsh winters or disease occur and abnormally low adult survival results, the populations struggle to rebound in the face of high predation, and in many instances likely result in a lower average population size as the new baseline. Predation must be managed concurrently with prey to provide healthy growing populations that in turn support all predators, including humans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. What is the etiology of the hair loss?
It's an exotic species of biting lice.
Okay.
In around 1996, I believe, somewhere in that time frame, it's thought that animals that were imported in made contact with our native black-tailed deer through a fence, through where they were kept, something like that is what has been speculated.
Thank you.
And it just got loose in the population, and it's still there today. You see it every wintertime. You only see clinical signs of it in the wintertime when you really observe the hair loss on them.
Thank you. So 75% cougars, how did the other predators fit into that? Coyotes, black bear?
In the first 9 weeks of life, the smaller predators take a toll. I mean, that's normal. You see that every population that's studied has the lowest survival rate is in that first 9 weeks of life because they're absolutely most vulnerable. I guess my point is that the mountain lion population has recovered so substantially, and the quota system in Western Washington isn't met. I mean, it's simply not met because they're very elusive and very difficult to hunt on this side of the state. It's a random occurrence if you're going to kill a mountain lion during hunting season. And it would help if there was a way that we could start to reduce some of those populations to give the animals, the ungulates, a bump. Because if they're just simply, their population is being regulated at this point by predation.
And I think, as you know, we are taking a look at that. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Jamie? Oh, pardon me. Commissioner McIsaac.
Go ahead, Don.
You introduced yourself at the beginning, and then during your testimony, you mentioned the tribe feels this or that. So let me first say thanks again for coming to testify. Should we take your testimony as a perspective of the macaw tribe?
Yeah, I've worked as a wildlife division manager for 20 years. Currently, I've moved up to the forest manager position, but the wildlife division is under me at this time, and I'm still.
Thank you.
Commissioner Holzmiller?
And you said you had a handout for us?
Yeah.
Okay, because you're bouncing through the numbers pretty quick, and they're ding, ding. But no, this sounds, and there again, in our part of the world, we're running into the same problems. We have game herds that are at, you know, below 50% of objectives. So, yes, there are a million extenuating circumstances in this world, but there are some that have a propensity to jump out and bite you. But thank you. Good.
Jamie?
Well, thank you to the Commission for coming to Port Angeles. I'm Jamie Michel. I work with Coastal Watershed Institute in Port Angeles. We're a small nonprofit focused on monitoring, research, conservation, restoration, and education along marine shoreline of the central Strait of Juan de Fuca. In the past several years, we've removed more than 1 mile of shoreline armor along central Strait shorelines for the benefit of forage fish and natural process. One of those projects was a unique partnership with a private landowner, and the restoration is nearing completion there. It is now a great opportunity for public lands conservation. And there's very little public land out on the Western Strait. In particular, the site is near the West Twin River. And at present, there are some local DFW staff taking the lead on preliminary planning for a public conservation effort, but just wanted to voice strong support for that to the Commission.
Thank you.
Any question? Thank you very much. Appreciate it, all of you coming and providing interesting comment today.
Thank you.
It's